Welcome to the CSIS podcast, a look at the week's news and foreign policy through the eyes of the experts at the Centre for Strategic and International Studies. I'm Colm Quinn. This week saw some dramatic rises and falls in world stock markets as perceived weaknesses in China's economy led to shockwaves that were felt not just in Asia, but across the West. This volatility comes against the backdrop of China's earlier interventions to aid its own flagging stock market and the devaluation of its currency, the renminbi. By the end of the week, stocks in Europe and the US had mostly recovered, but it represents the impact China now has on the global economy and asks questions of the dependence the world now has on continuing Chinese economic success. To talk us through what happened this week and its broader implications is Matt Goodman, former senior Asia economic advisor at the White House National Security Council and now our Simon Chair in Political Economy. I began by asking whether this volatility is over for now.
Well, that would be nice. I think it's hard to predict what markets are going to do at the best of times. But I do think that the underlying conditions that create this volatility are not yet over. I think we're not fully out of the woods necessarily. I think there are two big things going on that are impacting the markets in the world. One is that there are growing concerns about growth in the emerging world. China first and foremost, but other parts of the emerging world are also actually doing much less well than China even. And so that's one concern. And I think money is sort of moving away from the emerging world. That's one problem. The other problem, or it's, you know, a good thing from our point of view, but the US economy is doing relatively well. The second quarter GDP numbers came out this week and showed that the US grew 3.7% in real terms in the second quarter, which is a pretty strong performance, probably, frankly, difficult to sustain for us. And that's drawing money to the United States, in part because people think that the Federal Reserve is going to end this unusual period of low interest rates and easy money that's been in place since the financial crisis. And so that has a tendency to draw money in. But all of that is creating money flows that suggest that it's going to be a period ahead still of uncertainty and market volatility, I think. I mean, again, if I were smart enough to know exactly where the markets were going, then I wouldn't be working at CSIS. But seriously, as long as these underlying forces are there, I think it's going to be a little uncertain.
And I mean, a lot of this started with China trying to intervene in its own stock market. And, you know, it devalued its currency, was a big part of that. Is all this volatility stemming from that, or are there bigger forces at play?
Well, I think China was obviously a major catalyzing force in this most recent turmoil. What happened really before that devaluation was that the stock market in China had been grossly overinflated for the past year. The Shanghai Composite Index had risen something like 150% through this June. And that was obviously unsustainable. That was a bubble. And it was probably going to burst at some point. And in fact, in June, it started to drop. And the authorities were very concerned in China. And they intervened to try to stop people selling stocks, to stop new listings, to intervene by spending money themselves. And it really didn't work. Then you had this devaluation, which caused concerns about whether the Chinese were trying to, you know, make conditions even easier there, which suggests that money shouldn't be in the stock market. It's, you know, a little oversimplified, but that's basically the force at play there. And so that then provoked, it sort of fed into these broader concerns about the growth trajectories in China, in the broader emerging world, and, you know, the better performance in the United States. So I think that was what was the precipitating factor.
And maybe for our audience, who's probably more focused is international affairs and foreign policy, to try and explain the economic end of things, you know, state intervention is not new. The U.S. Did it obviously famously in 2008. Did we learn anything new about how governments can affect markets through this round of intervention?
Well, it's very difficult for governments to really control equity markets, stock markets. They go up and down on the basis of a lot of different factors, and government has a limited ability. They're huge, too. So government, even spending huge amounts of money in governmental terms, isn't going to necessarily deal with a tidal wave of money moving in the financial markets. And I think that, in fact, one of the concerns here was that China tried to kind of control or manipulate the markets, and the market, that test is that when a government does that, that tests a market, and so, or financial players. And so I think that was possibly a precipitating factor itself. In the end, I think what governments can do that's most effective in shaping markets is, number one, to have sound economic policies generally, so fiscal, monetary, structural policies that create growth and confidence in an economy. And the second thing is to signal clearly when they're going to shift policy. And that's one thing that I think the Chinese didn't do very well, still have not really done very well. They're sending kind of mixed signals, and the markets are concerned about that. So you need to get that signaling right. And I think the Chinese are learning a hard lesson from this experience.
And talking about China, how big of a hit is this? I know we've talked a little bit before on the CSS podcast about how small the Chinese stock market is relative to the size of the economy. But seeing what we've seen in the last couple of weeks, are we to worry about how China is going to do as tied as it is to the rest of the global market?
Well, I think that there were underlying forces that were slowing Chinese growth anyway. I think we've talked about these issues before, that China is in this transition from a growth model based on heavy investment and things like infrastructure and heavy industry and exports to a more consumption and services-led model of growth. And that transition inevitably meant slower growth. And so I think that's what's behind a lot of this, and that would have happened anyway. I think the concern now is that the stock market might be a further blow to confidence, both in the underlying economic conditions and in the ability of the Chinese authorities to deal with the problem. And so there is a risk. I mean, as you said, the stock market in China is not nearly as large a part of their economy, and I think the linkages are not that strong. Just because the stock market falls dramatically, it doesn't by itself mean that China's economic wheels are coming off. But I do think this could have a blow to confidence, because a lot of individual Chinese, middle-class Chinese, were investing in this market. And if they stop buying stuff because they are worried about their financial future, then that could have an impact on the macroeconomy.
Yeah, we're talking about market stability, but we could touch on government stability. Xi Jinping has come in with a very strong leadership and has been very forceful on a number of fronts. How much does this shake him and this idea that he knows what he's doing, he's in charge?
Well, I think he's in charge. I think the stories about him being vulnerable to a coup or some sort of a change of regime, I think, are a bit over-dramatized. I don't think that's going to happen in the short term. But I do think that this is a problem for Xi Jinping. One of the real pillars of his legitimacy and the strength of his administration is this commitment to continuing economic growth, making this economic transition to a more sustainable model of growth, and doing that in a way that will continue to satisfy middle-class Chinese. And if that goes away, if that is undermined by a dramatic slowing of growth or by a real financial disruption, then that could raise questions about his leadership. But I don't think that that means that in the short term there's going to be some sort of fundamental upheaval politically in China.
And how much is China's economic performance and success, do you think, tied to its kind of newfound confidence on the world stage in terms of projecting power and to, you know, moving in its own direction? You see this with the AIIB, you see it with certain actions in South China Sea as well. If China maybe slows down and has to worry about itself internally a little more, should we see maybe it acting less like it's been acting recently on the world stage?
Well, it could go either way. I think there is a view that the one, in a sense, you're suggesting, that a weaker China means one that is going to be more sort of humble, as it were, or modest in its ambitions internationally. And that's possible. I also think it's possible that that it could go the other way, that if China doesn't have this underlying economic success on which the legitimacy of the Communist Party largely rests, then it may have to resort to a more assertive nationalistic posture. Or at a minimum, it's going to be harder for China to make concessions. So for example, when President Xi Jinping comes to Washington in September to meet with President Obama, it may be harder for Xi Jinping to concede on some of the other issues that the U.S. is concerned about, cybersecurity, the South China Sea, and so forth, because of this question about his economic management. So I think it could go either way.
And to take it all in its totality and how the U.S. should approach this really unprecedented swings in the market and how it really affects the world, there's two things. Is obviously there's Xi Jinping's visit, where you touched on, you know, might have a stronger hand than it did. And then also, we talked about at the start, this idea of the Fed raising rates. With everything that's come before in the last couple of weeks and months, do you still think that's something that they should be looking at, or should they be shifting policy to something else?
Well, the Fed is going to make a decision about rates based on domestic economic conditions in the United States, not on what's going on in China, unless and until that actually has a material impact on U.S. growth prospects, which it doesn't seem to have had so far and, you know, seems unlikely to have in a major way. The Fed, I think, is looking at these stronger growth numbers, better labor market conditions, and I think there is an impetus to raise rates and to remove this really unusual policy that's been in place for the last really 7 years. But on the other hand, they are worried about these broader economic trends that could mean the U.S. growth is not sustainable. Inflation is not very strong in the United States. And, you know, the market turmoil in the U.S. Is another reason to give them pause. So I think now the consensus is the Fed probably won't raise rates in September. I don't know. Again, I don't predict those things, but I do think that that they're going to be looking at all of these domestic economic and financial factors first and foremost, and not really concerned directly with what happens in China or the rest of the world.
And with Xi's visit now, does that change the agenda now? It's going to be more focused primarily on the economy.
Well, I do think that now this economic and financial turmoil is going to be the sort of backdrop to the discussions between President Xi and Obama. I do think they're going to talk about it, but I don't think it fundamentally changes the agenda. I think at the end of the day, they were going to talk about how to generate world growth and how to resolve economic issues between the two sides, of which there are quite a number. U.S. businesses are having problems in China. The cyber theft of trade secrets is a business economic issue, as well as a security one. Those were things that were going to be on the agenda anyway, will still feature prominently. And then all of the other issues, both the cooperative issues in North Korea, Iran, dealing with Ebola and things, where there's been some positive movement, climate change, will be there. And on the other hand, the areas where we have some real tensions, I mentioned cyber, the South China Sea, human rights in China, I think they're going to be, all of those issues still will really dominate. And the economic issues will just provide, you know, a little more clarity on the reasons for the U.S. and China to try to resolve their economic differences and get on with generating growth as the two largest economies in the world.
And that was Matt Goodman. Bring us to the end of this week's show. For more, you can visit csis.org. And until next week, I'm Colm Quinn. Thanks for listening.